Hey guys, and welcome to the Well Woman podcast. My name is Sam, and I'm here with my best friend, naturopath doctor, Miss Laura. And today we are going to be talking about collagen. So, Laura, recently I've been seeing ads, commercials, everything telling me I should be taking collagen. My friends are spending tons of money on it. I just want to know, is it really worth it, or is it a trend? Let me know. Please help Dr. Laura.
Yeah, absolutely. And collagen is one of those things that's super trendy. And I get a lot of patients that come in and they're asking, kind of, should I be on collagen? And it seems, again, you're right. It's one of those things that seems like it's too good to be true. So, yeah, I think it's a great topic to kind of get into understanding the facts from fiction.
Awesome. So what exactly is collagen? We hear about it all the time. I see it on the commercials I watch. I read about it on Facebook ads. What
Yeah.
collagen? Why do we need it?
Yeah. So collagen is actually in our body. So it's the most abundant structure in our bodies. And we can really think of this as almost the glue that holds your body together. So skin, gut, bones, connective tissue, cartilage, it basically makes everything really strong and flexible. But the thing is it actually loses its thickness and strength over time, because collagen fibers are actually damaged over time.
Oh, okay. So when do I have to start worrying about these fibers being damaged and how it's going to affect my aging?
Yeah, so it actually starts impacting you in your 20s. So pretty early, like we're already there.
No.
So in your 20s, the body actually begins producing less and less collagen, and that decrease can be exacerbated with things like sun exposure, so UV, and that can create skin damage and degrade the collagen, and smoking. So smokers will actually have this happen quicker, which is things that you can obviously see in somebody who smoked for 20 years. That their skin kind of might be a lot more wrinkly, might look damaged, that sort of thing.
Yeah, for sure. You mentioned before, though, that collagen is a type of protein. So what's the difference between protein that I'm eating and collagen? What are they? How are they different?
Yeah, so that's really interesting because some people are now actually supplementing their collagen or their protein rather with collagen. And so collagen actually is a type of protein, but it's different in the form of protein. So if we've heard of complete versus incomplete proteins, collagen is actually seen as an incomplete protein. So when we're looking at complete proteins, it's basically comprised of at least 9 essential amino acids. So essential amino acids are ones that you can't get from your diet. So you have to, you have to get from them from your diet because your body can't make them. So that can be found in a variety of animal proteins, some plant proteins, quinoa and soy are two examples of a complete plant protein. And so collagen is actually an incomplete protein. So it doesn't have all of the amino acids required, but it definitely has some. And that's kind of those are beneficial in a lot of structures, like I mentioned before. So there is a little bit of a difference between the two.
Oh, interesting. So are we supposed to be taking both supplements? Do I need a collagen and a protein supplement, or am I just supposed to be taking protein, or how am I supposed to work this into my diet?
Yeah, so it's kind of yes and no. You do require complete proteins to build muscle and to repair every single structure in your body because everything's always turning over all of the time. Your body's constantly breaking things down and building them back up. So you do need complete protein. However, do you need it in the form of a protein supplement? It's kind of hard to say because with complete protein, you can get a lot of complete protein from your diet quite easily. So for people who consume animal proteins, you can just eat chicken or beef or whatever. For vegetarians, you can have a complete protein like quinoa. You can have something like beans and rice, which are also a complete protein. So that can aid in muscle repair and building. But you can often just get collagen as kind of an extra bonus. So if you're working out, let's say, I wouldn't necessarily take collagen after a workout. I would take a protein supplement because you have that complete protein to help with muscle building and repair. However, collagen can be good for muscle recovery and joint health. So yes and no. If you want to invest in one thing, I would say it might be better to invest in a collagen because protein is just easily found. A complete protein is easily found from your diet.
Oh, interesting. So I should get rid of my protein shakes and get collagen shakes.
Collagen's good. And collagen can be really pricey. Have you seen the different types and the brands that are out there with collagen?
No, because to be honest with you, I do have a lot of friends who use it and swear by it at the gym, but I kind of thought it was ridiculous because when I think of collagen, I honestly think of injectables, and I think of like, how can you be eating this substance that's going to make you look younger? So it's
And
very
that's
naive.
Well, and that's what people think of when they think of collagen. They think, and a lot of these fads are actually like too good to be true. So it's you do have to be skeptical. And Vital Proteins is one company that their collagen's actually really good, and they sell coffee creamers and they do all these sorts of things. But it's like literally $100 a month, so it can get really, really expensive.
Oh, okay, so then what other benefits should I be getting? If I'm going to buy collagen at this price, what are the benefits I'm going to get from it?
So the main thing, and the main thing that's we're obviously a very vain society. So anything that helps us on the exterior, we're kind of all over. Skin, hair, nails being one of the biggest ones among weight loss and that sort of thing. Whenever something can spark those types of claims, then we're in, right? So it's interesting to look into collagen with respect to skin health. So there's actually quite a bit of research out there, and they found that taking collagen internally was able to increase skin hydration, increase sebum production. So that's basically our natural oils. And that might sound bad, but it's actually good in the way of helping us balance that production. So for example, in someone who has acne might make too much, but they also might make not enough. And so if they're not making enough, then their pores aren't being cleared out as frequently with natural oils.
Oh.
And that's when dirt and debris and dead skin cells actually get stuck. And that's how a pimple forms.
Interesting.
So if you're someone that suffers from acne, but you have dry skin, and so that's something that I suffer with is acne, but I have dry skin. So that's not making enough sebum in the skin. So that's one of the things. So it's increasing sebum production, but not in a negative way. It was shown to increase skin elasticity, so helping it feel like kind of more plump, and reduced skin biological age. So skin was stronger, more hydrated, more dewy, and less wrinkly.
Awesome. Those are
Yeah, so
things.
yeah, well, exactly. And this was internal collagen. This wasn't topical. So a lot of the products will sell face creams and face, I guess, treatments and masks and things with collagen because it's all this buzz about collagen and everybody has to be putting collagen on their skin. Well, they found that topical application was actually ineffective.
Yeah, I was gonna say, I thought I read somewhere that the collagen isn't absorbed through the skin.
Yeah, and that's something that can be absorbed is hyaluronic acid, and that's a whole other thing. But collagen, no, we need to be taking it because we make it internally. And it's kind of like for health, skin health from the inside out. The other thing that I found was really interesting was there was actually a study on cellulite and collagen.
Oh, yeah.
So they basically took these women, they were normal weight women with cellulite, and they gave them for 6 months, they gave them collagen treatment, which was internal collagen, and they found that it actually led to a statistically significant decrease in the degree of cellulite, and it reduced the skin waviness on thighs.
Oh, I like the sounds of that too. This is getting better and better.
Yeah, because I think when you do something like when you're working out, you're exercising, there's some things that you just can't change. Like it's a lot of genetics can play into whether or not you get cellulite or you don't. So it's kind of nice that they saw visible improvements with 6 months of collagen.
Yeah, no, definitely. I would be interested in using it just from these two.
The other thing which I found really interesting was so in a lot of long-term care homes, the elderly are often getting pressure ulcers. So from being laying in one position for too long, the skin obviously gets wear and tear, and then you get these ulcers. So everybody has to be kind of moved and relocated to prevent this. And they actually found that collagen supplementation in the elderly improved pressure ulcer healing in the elderly.
Awesome. That's really
So from a medical standpoint, this is actually has functional abilities in long-term care homes, let's say, and in hospitals and in critical care and that sort of thing.
Yeah, well,
And
I'm
the
learning about
other,
that
and
nursing too. So, how important that is.
yeah.
So that's good
Yeah,
to
and it
know.
can lead to a lot of infections and once a wound begins, an infection starts in somebody who's already very ill.
Compromised, yeah, for sure.
Yeah. So the other thing was healthy nails. So I mentioned skin and nails are one of those like coin terms that people are all in. Like, I want to get my nails to grow better. I want them to stop breaking. They actually found that people who took 2.5 grams of collagen, and they did that for 24 weeks, and this actually increased their nail growth, improved their brittle nails, and decreased the frequency of broken nails.
Oh, wow. This is
So,
like a
yeah.
great thing.
Yeah, and it's actually one of those things that I guess the trend and the fad of it all actually has some truth to it. So I really like collagen, and I actually use it, and in practice, and I recommend it to patients, and especially for gut health is one of the ones. I find that I'm not often recommending things for patients to reduce wrinkles per se, but I'm definitely doing things that help foundationally. And when you look at healing the gut, you look at healing everything else. It's not as glamorous to say that you're healing the gut as opposed to saying I'm getting rid of your wrinkles and I'm making your face more hydrated. People want to hear that, but ultimately that's what you are doing if you're healing the gut.
Definitely.
So, collagen can provide anti-inflammatory benefits to the gut. It can help to repair the cell walls and decrease what's known as leaky gut. So, if you have inflammation in your gut, it just helps to kind of repair the walls in that way. And then the last thing and the last benefit that I want to talk about is joint health. So, they actually have supplemented collagen with athletes, and they've shown reduced joint pain and improved recovery after a workout. But also, those suffering from osteoarthritis have taken collagen and they've had reduced pain scores.
Wow, I'm really impressed. Really impressed. You've sold me on it.
Yeah.
So, on that note, have you said you suggested considering all these benefits, you mentioned you were giving it to your patients. Have you personally tried it? What's the best type? What should I be buying?
Yeah, so I personally have tried collagen in the form of a supplement. I use usually a powder. There's ones you can get at the health food store, like Progressive makes a really good one. There's lots, like I mentioned, Vital Proteins. It's very expensive, but it's delicious in their coffee creamers and things like that. But what you're looking for is you're looking for a clean product. A ton of collagen products that are, you'll notice the cheaper they are, the worse they are in terms of processing and added ingredients and added really just crap. Tons of collagens are made in a factory with genetically modified ingredients, animals that have been given antibiotics, synthetic growth hormones for fattening, and drugs to promote muscle growth. So it's kind of actually scary, right? And why would you take something that's genetically modified if you're trying to better yourself and better your health? So you're really looking for anything sourced from a grass-fed animal. Free of GMOs, free of antibiotics, free of hormones, no inflammatory ingredients, no binders, fillers, or other unnecessary ingredients, just pure collagen. And the other thing I would say is I always recommend starting with, especially when we're looking at gut health, is starting with making your own bone broth. So have you ever heard of bone broth?
I've heard of it. I've heard it's a pretty trendy thing as well.
Yeah,
Like a
so.
though.
Yeah, and so with bone broth, literally all it is you're taking organic bones and you're putting them in water, usually in like a crock pot. You'd simmer all day long. You're just covering the bones in water. You're putting some apple cider vinegar. That helps to take some of the minerals out of the bones. So in that, you're actually getting minerals and collagen. So you're getting these nutrients. So often with gut health specifically, I would actually recommend bone broth over a collagen powder because you have all those extra nutrients that can help with healing inflammation in the gut. So that's another way I would say you can get collagen without it being super, super expensive.
Yeah, that's a really great idea. As you know, I'm actually vegetarian. So, what do
Yeah.
I take other than bone broth to get this collagen?
Yeah. So, for vegetarians and vegans, obviously these are animal sourced. So you can't necessarily consume collagen, but you can actually consume the building blocks of collagen so that your body can actually make collagen. So foods high in vitamin C, so fruits and vegetables, leafy greens, strawberry and kale are really high in vitamin C as well. foods that are also high in sulfur, so like broccoli and cauliflower, arugula and garlic, these all can help with the development of collagen. So in general, making sure you're eating a wide variety of fruits and vegetables actually should make you pretty okay with your own collagen development.
Oh.
And one interesting fact is that sugar actually destroys elastin and collagen. So refined sugars and processed foods can actually kill your collagen production.
Oh, that's such a heartbreak. That's so heartbreaking. Okay, so basically I'm gonna have to eat more veggies and fruits, and I'll make my own collagen then. I don't need those
Yeah.
supplements. What are like seeing this is so new and everybody's started just taking this recently, have you noticed or are there any side effects that we should be worried about taking it?
Yeah, and I actually haven't noticed specific side effects. I think it's really similar to protein. And in my honest opinion, I would say it's actually better tolerated than a protein powder from what I've seen, because a lot of people, for example, take a whey protein, and so they might be sensitive to whey, or a lot of people don't know that whey comes from dairy. So if they're sensitive to dairy, they may be sensitive to whey. And having said that, a lot of people aren't sensitive to a whey isolate. They'll be sensitive to kind of the other proteins in milk and the sugar, so lactose. A lot of people are sensitive to lactose. So some people can be okay with like a whey isolate, but other people get bloated from like pea proteins, soy proteins, and lots of other different, I find a lot of the vegetarian proteins people react to. So with collagen, I think it's actually a lot better tolerated and it's better absorbed with most people. So I think that the problems aren't with the specific collagen supplement itself, but really it's the reason why. So say your hair's falling out and your nails are thinning, and you're like, I'm going to take collagen to help that. That's where I think the danger comes in, is self-diagnosing and self-treating.
Fair enough.
So like when it comes to hair, skin and nails, yeah, collagen can improve those things, but if you have crappy hair and nails and skin because of an iron deficiency or an imbalanced thyroid or a B12 deficiency or a poor diet or poor digestion or inflammation, then collagen might not do a whole lot.
Okay, so we need to be aware of those things. It's not a
Yeah.
fix-all for everything. Like anything,
Exactly.
we need to take
Exactly.
into account many more factors.
Yep.
Okay, so talking about healthy skin, I'm obsessed with it, as we all are, like you said. I
Yeah.
try everything, I buy all the products. I'm terrible.
And I'm sure it's not a waste of money at all.
No, of course not. I believe it works.
Yeah.
Placebo. So,
Yeah.
what other things should I be doing to improve my skin health? Please help
Yeah.
me.
Yes. With skin is a really, really tough thing, because as much as people hate it, it is definitely something you need to get to the root cause of. So you need to know why your skin is doing what it's doing, whether it's acne, whether it's eczema, et cetera, et cetera. I find a lot of the issues are acne. A lot of people's concerns are acne, because it's really the only concern that we struggle with, that everybody has to know we're struggling with. And so if you have diarrhea, nobody really has to know you have diarrhea other than like people you live with. But no, you don't have to tell everybody that you meet, strangers and everything, that you have diarrhea. And when you have acne, strangers automatically know, and everybody in public automatically knows. And that's why it's really a huge issue, is because people are so obsessed with what others think of them, and it's natural. So acne seems to be a huge, huge concern. And I think that looking at the root cause of acne can be a variety of things. So some people have hormonal acne. So coming off of the birth control pill, I find quite often people will have hormonal acne. I mentioned foods and poor diet. So looking at food sensitivities and watching to see what makes you flare up and what doesn't. And if there are certain foods that cause you to have more acne when you eat more sugar or you're coming up to your period, that can be hormonal changes. And like you could have more cravings coming up to your period, so your acne kind of flares up then.
Yeah, I have I every before every period I get acne.
Yeah.
Just
Where
every time.
do you get it?
I'd say like around my chin, if that makes
Yeah.
sense.
Yeah.
Definitely. But every it's clockwork. I always get it. And like you said, it makes me so self-conscious because it's just there. And I feel like everyone's staring at it and I can't help it. I literally, that's how much it makes me self-conscious. So
Yeah, absolutely. And I also have experience with extreme cystic acne, and I feel the exact same way. And it's the worst when you get pimples and they're so deep and so big, and you can't, they never pop. They just always are kind of there and red and painful because they're so deep that they can't come to a head. So I definitely understand how people get self-conscious about that. So identifying again what the root cause is, it does take a long time. I would say for hormonal acne, I would say give it at least when you're doing treatment, 3 to 6 months is like your standard. And people hate to hear that, but it's
Gosh.
really the truth.
But think about how long most people are on hormones. Like for myself, even included, I've been on birth control since I was like 15 years old and I'm 27. So that's a significant portion of my life that I've been on a synthetic hormones, right?
Exactly. And who's to say what's going to happen when you get off, right? And I think that'll be a whole other topic that we should really dive into because it's my favorite topic. But beyond hormones, looking at stress and then looking at topical treatments. So topical treatments can be really beneficial. And I'm actually talking to someone, a friend of mine who owns a spa about these topical treatments and the benefits to them and how they work. So I think that'll be really interesting.
Awesome.
But looking at topical treatments that you're, are you doing negative things to the skin? So are you stripping the skin? Are you drying it out? I have super sensitive skin, so I have to be really careful with what I do and what I put on my skin because it reacts to everything. My skin dries up and sometimes it'll feel so dry it's like leather. Have you ever tried Proactiv?
Oh yeah.
Yeah, so I'm trying to remember if I used yours or if it was when my brother had it. But I used someone's Proactiv one time just as a face wash. I just wasn't even thinking. And literally the next day, my skin was leather. It felt like leather because it was so dry and it was so red and it was disgusting. So there are a lot of things you have to be really careful for in doing because they can actually really make things worse, even though the commercials say that you'll have beautiful skin. So yeah.
How about hydration? Like, I am so bad at keeping myself hydrated. I just can't. So what do I do? How do I drink more water? Like,
Yeah, proper hydration is such a root cause treatment when it comes to skin health because, I mean, if you're hydrated, we're always talking about moisturizing and hydrating and protecting from the elements. And especially when you're living in minus 30 and I'm in minus 30 right now, the outside just sucks the moisture out of your skin. So making sure you drink more water, I always say, especially when it's cold out, people don't want to drink cold water. So adding in like I like to drink personally, I do a lot of warm water with lemon because I just find it really soothing. And so that's a good way to try to get it in. Anything that you're having that doesn't have caffeine is counts as hydration. So that's sparkling water, herbal teas, if you find a tea that you really like. I don't know if you have deep David's tea out there, but
No.
having like a chamomile tea or a peppermint tea or a ginger tea can not only help your digestion and heal your gut, but also just a way to get water in as well. So just trying to just drink more water as much as possible. Coffee's dehydrating, so we really have to make sure we're matching the amount of coffee we have with water before we're even counting the amount of water that we're drinking. So I always say if you have a cup of coffee, have a cup of water, and then you start from zero. So
That's
that's hard.
tough. That's so honestly, I consider myself a camel.
Oh,
I
yay.
do. I seriously do. I drink like a bottle of water a day. I'm not kidding you. And I just don't have cravings for water. I don't want water. I drink coffee, don't get me wrong, but I just don't. I hate it and it bothers me. But that's probably another episode. So we'll talk about
Yeah, and
hydrating another
well, and with your like, how's your pee? Is it bright yellow? Is it like, is it clear? Like, what's your pee look like?
I just, well, that's part of the reason I don't drink a lot of water. A little off topic, but it's because I'm going to the bathroom so often that it's annoying. So I've just like started slowly weaning myself off drinking a lot of water, and then
Weaning yourself off water.
I don't have to pee every 30 minutes. Like it's frustrating.
Yeah.
I can't.
Yep.
I wake up all night, like all day long. I just can't stay out of the bathroom. So I just don't want. I just I think I've like have an aversion to drinking a lot of water.
Yeah, and I think that that's a problem with a lot of people who have similar issues, and we'll probably talk about this in the future, but just having to pee all the time is a detractor for drinking water. And your body does adapt to a certain degree to drinking that much water. If you kind of space it out, your body adapts. At first you'll be peeing such an annoying amount, but then you kind of get used to it. I find that the best way for me is some days I'll sit there and I'll get working and I'll be on the computer and I won't drink any water at all. And I sit there and I'm like, oh my God, I haven't drank one glass of water. So I find that the best thing for me is getting up in the morning and just chugging a big glass of water, just so I start my day with at least I drank water to start. But it is hard, and I find actually I drink more water when I'm sitting at my desk doing work because I have the bottle right in front of me. And so that's kind of easier. It's just, but if I don't have a bottle of water filled up beside me, I often won't get up and fill it out because I'm too lazy. If you
No,
like get,
I am too.
yeah, and if you
I
break your
consider,
focus.
yeah, and I can, I've been considering getting one of those bottles that actually reminds you
Yeah.
to drink, which I think might actually be something that I need to invest in, but we'll
Yeah,
see.
you need some incentive.
I do. It's terrible. But anyways, back to
So,
skin.
yeah. So hydration is really, really important. Hydration is a huge part
Yes,
of it. So I'm glad we went on a little bit of a tangent because it's so important to make sure that you're hydrated because that's just a simple number one thing you can do for your skin. So looking at ingredients, so again, topical treatments can strip the skin. There can be harmful ingredients and irritants. Like you really need to look at that when we're looking at products we're using. So again, like I mentioned with Proactiv, I'm not trying to bad talk Proactiv. That was my experience, but it's good to have products. Look for natural products. And actually, on that note of skin health, look at your ingredients in your products. Like when we're looking at product ingredients, we're trying to avoid parabens and phthalates, just to name a few, because these are actual endocrine disruptors. So these actually disrupt our hormones. And so if we're talking about hormonal acne or hormonal anything, irregular periods, we want to make sure that we're actually avoiding these things that are known to disrupt our hormones.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah, so and actually the Environmental Working Group, if you actually you can just Google it, but the Environmental Working Group has and chemicals to avoid. So I always just Google Environmental Working Group chemicals to avoid or ingredients to avoid. They have a list of ingredients that you should be avoiding in your products, and they give you the reasons why. So you can really go through and see what you should be avoiding. And my rule of thumb is I look through anything. If there's parabens, I just put it down right away. And that's anything that's methyl paraben, ethyl paraben, anything that has paraben on the end of the word is a paraben. So they're kind of easy to spot. The other things I avoid are anything that says phthalate, so it's PTH is the word. And then looking at anything that just says fragrance, you never know what's in that. And if you look again at Health Canada, a lot of things can fall under fragrance. So that's kind of a side note. And those can actually irritate your skin. They can disrupt your hormones. It's increasing your toxic load. So just increasing the chemicals in your body in general. So ingredients, products are a huge, huge thing. And some people think that they need to have scrubs and harsh, harsh things to get rid of acne when often it's the opposite. And there's this whole thing with using oils on your skin. And I haven't had very good experience with respect to that. Have you used oils on your skin?
I use coconut oil
Okay. And
quite
do you find
often.
you break out with it or is it good with your skin?
No, I don't even find it that moisturizing. I was using it regularly every day, and one of my best friends came over, and she's like, "What are you doing?" Yeah, because I literally had a jar from the kitchen in my
Yeah, but
bathroom.
that's fine. I just think it comes down to personal preference and almost like personal skin and genetics and things like that as to how you react. Because I used coconut oil and I had a breakout. And I've done it more than once that I've used certain oils. I've used hemp seed oil. I've used avocado oil. I've used rosehip oil. I've used jojoba or jojoba or however you pronounce it, oil on my skin. And I feel like, and there's no real like quote unquote science or evidence behind any of this. So I find it's, well, not that I've seen at least. So I find it's a lot of trial and error and seeing what works with your skin. Some people swear by it and take off their makeup with coconut oil and don't even, they don't even moisturize after. They just like wipe off the excess and leave it on. And for me, that did not work. So you really have to find a routine that works for you. And it's good to speak to an expert who knows a lot about those products and knows a lot about how to kind of walk you through it. So that's kind of that with respect to ingredients and topicals. But specific skin supports, just in general, I'm going to go over a few nutrients and just talk about why you should or you shouldn't use them internally or topically. So vitamin C, again, we talked about its role in production of collagen. It is an antioxidant, so it's really important to make sure you're adding vitamin C. And you can actually do this topically and internally. There's seen some benefits that have been seen. And actually, vitamin C is a really good one because it's water soluble, so you will get rid of it. So you can't really overdose on vitamin C if you want to start taking it. However, if you do overdose on vitamin C, you will have diarrhea. So you know that you've met your vitamin C threshold when you have diarrhea. So that's kind of it. So people have different tolerances, and you can actually buy a vitamin C extended release, so you don't actually feel it as bad, or a prolonged release type of vitamin C, so that you don't have diarrhea. So you can do it in high doses, and I'll use that in different sort of conditions when I'm trying to target a high dose vitamin C. But that's the only thing I would caution against with vitamin C.
Fair enough.
And
That's legitimate.
yeah, and so you don't want to give yourself diarrhea, but vitamin C can be helpful. And then again, going back to collagen production, if you're a vegetarian and you're trying to make more collagen and you're eating lots of fruits and vegetables, maybe a good quality vitamin C supplement might be a good addition.
Interesting.
So then vitamin E is an antioxidant. Topical application and oral application, there's mixed results in studies with respect to skin health specifically. It was seen as effective in combination with vitamin C, and obviously we want to be treating vitamin E in a deficiency. However, vitamin E is fat soluble, so we really want to make sure that if we're taking it, it's A, at the right dose, and B, we're not taking too much, and C, that we actually need it, because it's not the highest rated supplement with respect to helping with skin health, although it can, and it definitely plays a role. There's a supplement that I use all the time in skin health. It's called ACEs plus zinc. It's ACE, selenium, and zinc, which are all ones that I'm going to talk about right now. However, vitamin E on its own, not much research, and it could be dangerous if you're not having the proper instructions to taking it.
Really interesting. I always used vitamin E on like scars and things like that.
Yeah, and vitamin E creams and things like that. And I will note with vitamin E creams, for scars in particular, you want to make sure, again, a lot of these creams are petroleum based and have parabens in them. So you'd actually be surprised at the ones that have crap in them that aren't supposed to. And something like a common brand, let's say like Pond's, you know, Pond's, like the it's been around for years. My mom used to use it, and I actually read the ingredients, the back of the ingredients one day, and it was like parabens. Like there's literally three of them just in the normal, just in the normal cream. You think you're doing yourself a favor by getting like a nice moisturizing cream, and you find out that it actually has things in it that are really bad for you. So vitamin E, again, topically for scars, topically for pimples and things like that, can be helpful. However, like I said, orally mixed with vitamin C. Topically, what you can actually do is take a vitamin E capsule and poke a hole in it, and then you actually just like squeeze it out and use the vitamin E from the capsule. Then you know it's just straight vitamin E.
Interesting. I've never tried that. I'm going to do that.
Yeah, and yeah, that's kind of what we used to recommend. Then it doesn't oxidize either, so you're just kind of using it capsule by capsule. And
Awesome.
then
That's a good trick.
yeah, and then selenium is another one. So like I mentioned, in that product that I use a lot of time, there's selenium. It's an antioxidant. But it's also really important in thyroid health. And with selenium, you do have to be careful based on the dose you're taking. Like, I wouldn't just go buy a bottle of selenium and start taking it, because it does build up in the body and you can have a toxicity to selenium. A food that's really high in selenium is Brazil nuts. So you actually only need like two medium-sized Brazil nuts a day to get a lot of selenium. And so you don't actually even need to take a capsule. Like you could just eat Brazil nuts. But again, you just have to be careful. From a food source, you likely won't overdose on selenium, but you just need to be careful. Selenium is important for immune health. It's an antioxidant as well. So it is good, but again, this is one of the ones I would say be cautious with. Vitamin A can be teratogenic, so it can actually cause problems in pregnancy and fetal development. And did you know that Accutane is really just high dose vitamin A?
Oh, I had no idea.
Yeah, so it's a synthetic form, but it's high dose vitamin A. And with Accutane, like the amount of side effects are large. And I don't think people really realize the amount of side effects with Accutane. So it's actually a really dangerous medicine, and you have to get blood work constantly when you're on Accutane. You have to be on two forms of birth control because if you get pregnant, it is extremely teratogenic, like I mentioned.
I
And
heard that.
yeah, and it's really, really hard on the liver. So drinking while you're on Accutane, like imagine the teenagers that are put on Accutane. Do you think that they're not drinking?
Oh my gosh, that's terrible.
Yeah, and two forms of birth control. Do you think that they're using two forms of birth control? Like, just thinking of the level of psychological development in these people, right, who are often on Accutane.
My
It's
goodness.
hard.
I never knew that.
Yeah, and Accutane is really hard on your system after. So you have to get things like liver function tests done all the time when you're on Accutane because it's really, really hard on the liver. So similarly, not as potent, but vitamin A treatment is teratogenic. So, for example, if I'm treating someone prenatally who's trying to get pregnant, I give a vitamin A free multivitamin because I just don't, or sorry, a prenatal vitamin. I give a vitamin A, like no vitamin A in this prenatal because I just think that it's not worth it to give vitamin A.
Yeah.
We're getting vitamin A from lots of fruits and vegetables, and you don't need it when it's potentially teratogenic to your growing fetus. But again, it's also can be harmful to your liver. So depending on the dose you're taking, usually about one drop of vitamin A is about 10,000 international units. That's usually okay. Anything above that can really, really build up and be toxic. But again, if you're trying to get pregnant or you are pregnant or anything like that, I would definitely not take this. And the other thing is it actually can, again, it's fat soluble, like vitamin E, like I mentioned, fat soluble, so it does build up. So you do want to be cautious in overdosing. But this has actually been used in the form of, when you get like a retinoid cream or a retinol for acne, that's actually vitamin A. It's a form of vitamin A.
Oh.
So it can be beneficial for sun damaged skin, wrinkles, wound healing, immune function obviously internally, but topically, topical vitamin A can actually be good because it is absorbed without reaching systemic levels. So if you have like a vitamin A cream, you're not going to really absorb it in the blood, so you won't overdose.
Okay.
So vitamin A is another thing
That's
that's good.
good.
And then looking at zinc is good for immune function. It's actually also great for hormone health, and it's good for skin. So I love zinc. Oftentimes you won't really overdose on zinc. The only thing that can happen with zinc really is the imbalance of zinc and copper. So zinc can actually deplete your copper levels. So you just want to be careful of that balance. Often I'll get a supplement that has zinc and copper so that they kind of balance each other out.
Okay.
And then something like omega-3 fatty acids, you can never go wrong with. So if you're a vegetarian, you can always get like a flaxseed oil. If you're not vegetarian, I would recommend a fish oil, high quality fish oil. That's anti-inflammatory, good for the gut, good for really everything, mental health, that sort of thing. And then the last thing I would say is vitamin D. Again, A, D, E, K are fat soluble. So vitamin D is going to accumulate. You need to make sure that your levels are tested so that you can make sure you're not taking too much because that can be detrimental to your bone health, your calcium balance, that sort of thing. But it can actually be, you can actually get vitamin D from healthy sun exposure, not if you're wearing sunscreen, but if you go outside for like 10 to 15 minutes, no sunscreen, you can actually get enough vitamin D to make in your skin. But I mean, in Yellowknife, you're not getting a whole ton of sun exposure. And the crazy thing is vitamin D testing actually used to be covered by OHIP in Ontario. Is it covered in Yellowknife? Do you know?
I didn't even know we could be
Yeah,
tested.
so you actually can be tested. Your vitamin D levels can be tested in the blood to see if you're deficient, to see if you need more. In Ontario, it's covered by our provincial health care. I don't know if it is in Yellowknife, but I would imagine, or sorry, it was covered by our provincial health care, but it actually has been taken away because the
Oh.
government's or the Ontario government's reasoning was that, well, everybody's deficient, so no one needs to be tested. So now you can only be tested, yeah. So now you can only be tested at no cost if you have a disorder that would lead to malabsorption, so something like celiac disease or Crohn's. And then the other reason you can be tested for free is if you have osteoporosis. So, like if you actively already have low bone, mass density, you can be tested.
Sad.
So,
But I have heard that. I've seen studies on that as well, that basically everybody who doesn't live in the Caribbean
yeah.
is too much deficient.
But it's so important.
So here we
Yeah,
go.
and it's so important to see where you are on the level of how deficient you are, because that'll change your dosing. And again, it's so important to speak to somebody to make sure you're taking the right dose, because it can quite quickly get toxic if you're taking too much. But vitamin D can help with skin damage, with wound healing. Again, important to speak to a healthcare provider before you start taking anything, because all of the things I mentioned, you want to make sure that you're not taking the wrong thing, and you want to make sure that it's not too high and building up when you're thinking that you're low. So,
How about D drops? What are your thoughts on those? Is that better or
yeah, so
worse?
I actually like vitamin D in a drop form over a capsule form, because, or a tablet or capsule, because when the vitamin D is in a drop form, it's actually usually in a fat. So a lot of times it'll be in like a medium chain triglyceride, which is found in coconut oil, and fat is what vitamin D needs to absorb. So I've seen vitamin D levels increase in somebody who takes drops and not increase in somebody who takes like a capsule or a pill, because it's not absorbing properly. It needs fat to absorb. So at least you're guaranteed that in a drop form that it's going to be absorbed, because it's already had the fat in there.
Interesting. Okay, good to know. I've kind of been debating that with a few friends lately, so I'm
Yeah.
going to start taking drops, I think.
Yeah, and drops are so much easier than swallowing. We already, I don't know, I already swallow so many pills that it's good to have a vitamin D that I can just like drop on my tongue and call it a day. So I find it a lot easier to do that instead. And with vitamin D, it's something like vitamin D, vitamin A, because they're fat soluble, you actually don't need to take it every day. Like you could do every couple days, because you're storing it, versus like a B vitamin that's water soluble, or a vitamin C that's water soluble that you get rid of. So you can take it every couple days as opposed to every single day.
How do you feel about biotin?
Biotin's interesting because it a lot of people use that as basically their hair, skin, and nails supplement. And I find that in the research that I've seen, people only have results with hair, skin, and nails when they have a deficiency of biotin. So it's like replacing levels to a non-deficient person. What we're looking for, really, when we look for the efficacy of nutrients and supplements and herbs, we look at, well, nutrients specifically, we look at, is there an impact beyond bringing you up to levels that aren't deficient, right? So when we look at levels, when we look at treating something, let's say with vitamin C, we know that vitamin C prevents scurvy, right? If we have normal levels of vitamin C, we don't get scurvy. But then we look at the research to see if beyond those normal levels, should a person who doesn't have scurvy still take vitamin C and be impacted positively by that? So the same thing is when we look at biotin, it's like in a person who doesn't have deficient biotin, is more biotin going to help? And I honestly don't think so. And I haven't really seen much good quality research. And if anybody has it, I would love to see it, but good quality research to suggest otherwise. And that's the same with silica too. I've seen like kind of in the news, in a lot of hair, skin, and nail supplements. And I don't see the benefit with that specifically.
All right. Well, that's good to know. So I can stop buying that as
Invest in some good quality vitamin
well.
C, some D.
I see. Well, thanks, Laura. Like, I feel like you've really covered this topic well and given me lots of new stuff to try. And as well, I think I'm really going to have to take a look at all of the stuff I'm using and check out for those parabens
Yeah,
and
absolutely. Make sure you're looking at your ingredients. Thank you for joining this episode of the Well Women Podcast. I am your host, Dr. Laura, and my co-host, Sam. We appreciate your listen and have a good day. Bye-bye.
Bye.